Welcome all. I declare the Audit and Risk Committee meeting open for the 18th of December 2025. All in attendance. We have no response to public question time. No public questions. There are no petitions, deputations, presentations or submissions. Item 6, confirmation of minutes of the Audit Committee meeting held on the 20th of November 2025. Do I have a mover and a second?
No.
Thank you, Councillor Strange. Thank you, Councillor Crooks. Any corrections or clarifications for anyone? No? All those in favour? Thank you, it's unanimous. Item 7, reports of officers. Item 7.1, the adoption of the 24-25 Shire of Brewsrock annual report. Mr. Furr.
Thank you, Mr. President. What I'm going to do is hand over to the Exec Manager Corporate Services, who will commence the conversation, and I'll interject as required.
Thank you. You've all received the annual report. Obviously, the finances form a large part of that. We've had a clean audit. There was one notable item in there, though, in relation to the joint ventures, which is an old issue that's gone back years and is now correctly represented in the financials. And although a significant finding, we've still got a unqualified audit.
I think I'll interject, if I may, through the chair, just to put a little bit of context to that. The headline I will say, and certainly that what was fed back at the exit meeting by OAG, is that we're probably one of the first local governments where this has been picked up, and there's an expectation that many other local governments are probably going to be finding something similar. So it was actually, whilst it was a significant finding and it goes back quite a few years, enormous amount of work undertaken by the team to address. And basically what happened, in short summary, was that the administration was recognising the full value of the asset as opposed to in accordance with the lease arrangement. So that, we've gone back retrospectively and made that adjustment, and as a consequence it has a material impact on the balance sheet. The OAG was extremely positive at the exit meeting with regards to the way that the administration and the Shire had worked to complete what was quite a significant amount of work associated with this, and again, an unqualified audit, which was an outcome that's expected.
So we'll say, keep going, Catherine.
That's good. But you made the adjustment you need in the accounts, didn't you? So you worked, did all the work, and then you made the adjustment, yeah. And then given an unqualified opinion on it.
Through the chair, absolutely incorrect. From 2023 onwards, there's been adjustments throughout.
And sitting through the meeting, I will commend Mr. Darby and your team, because probably the best way to describe it was glowing praise from the OAG, which is a strange thing to sit on and hear, but they're very happy with the work that you guys put in, so it's almost a pleasure to sit at the meeting. That's so well done.
The feedback that we had through the chair was the strong sense of collaboration and openness throughout the audit process, and whilst I'll hand back to Mr. Darby to go through the findings, the headline is that from a financial perspective there was practically nothing identified, which is testament to the team and the work that they've done, as well as the overarching support work that we've undertaken over the last 12 months with our financial consultant to get our financial reporting systems and mechanisms in what I would consider close to best practice methodology.
Thank you. I'll just go through the findings in the management letter. As I said, the joint arrangement was a significant finding. It had a financial impact on the audit opinion. In terms of the remedial action required for that, it's already fully been undertaken, and processes are now in place for going forward for that to be recognised correctly year in, year out. talking to our consultant Bob Waddell, we're about the fourth shire he's done this similar work for. And yes, as Mr. Ferber's alluded to at the exit meeting, there was talk from the Auditor General that they expect many more cases to crop up. Next one, the excessive leave balance, one that we have every year. A minor finding. Management's working hard to rectify this matter. Given that we cannot force people to take leave under the award, it is not the easiest thing to fix, and now you can't cash out leave either.
And through the chair, that was something that we've engaged through Wagga Employee Relations and also to the auditor to give us some insight. And whilst we're not trying to find some solutions to this, the state award that we sit under now does actually prevent us, as Mr. Darby's mentioned. So we have chipped away at that.
At least it's gone down.
It's gone down, and it will continue to go down.
The IT risk register, another minor finding. Was previously a moderate finding in 2024. A lack of adequate risk assessment, identification, evaluation, and mitigating internal control processes in relation to IT and cybersecurity. Management has accepted this recommendation. We recommend a comprehensive risk identification, evaluation, and mitigation process be undertaken to ensure all potential risks associated with IT, specifically cybersecurity, are considered and documented. Subsequently, we recommend the risk register be updated to include specific information, technology and cybersecurity risks such as ransomware breaches, data breaches due to phishing emails, general data breaches, reputational damage and related media which may be required in the event of a cybersecurity breach, etc. We've accepted this recommendation and confirmed that work will be completed by the 30th of June 2026 to address these matters.
And through the chair, some additional context there. I've already met with the Department of Digital Government, and we have identified the work that is still to be completed as part of the pilot project, and that work will be done well in advance of the 30th of June 2026.
And the final finding, the lease agreement, is another minor one. It was identified that various lease agreements are out of date. The lack of current lease agreements may expose the Shire to financial and operational risks, including potential disputes over tenancy terms, rental amounts and responsibilities. It also reduces the organisation's ability to enforce contractual obligations and respond effectively to changes in occupancy. We recommend that management implement timely renewal of renegotiation of lease agreements. Updated lease documents should be maintained to accurately reflect the occupancy terms and minimise financial and operational risks. The management comment is that we accept the recommendation and confirm that this work is already underway with the employment of a Shire staff member to oversee and address all lease arrangements. This will be completed by the 30th of June 26.
Looking now that we have a dedicated person,
yes,
in this field, that should mitigate that.
Very much so.
Well
experienced in that field as well.
Through the chair, firstly, the additional work with regards to the joint arrangement works does attract some additional cost from our auditors. The expectation when we go forward with our audits and our annual financials is that they're signed off before the 30th of September. We met all the criteria there. It was only towards the end of the audit process where this was identified and obviously warranted extra work. I can say that I had a fruitful conversation with OAG and asked them to consider the costs with regards to additional expenses that would be incurred. And I'm pleased to report that OAG did come back and actually discount the total cost that we would have cost to the tune of 50%. So you're looking at around about, I think it was $5,000 to $6,000 extra cost that was required. I do need to point out to the committee though that we did also incur extra cost with our statutory consultant who does our annual financials and a lot of the work that needed to be done. But again, in the scheme of things, a little bit extra, but still well within our budgetary our budget and no additional pressure associated with that financially. A good outcome overall. The only other thing I would add to this point is that from a compliance perspective, if committee determines to accept the annual report of which the financials sit within that, we are obliged to call an annual a general electors meeting within 56 days, and therefore the recommendation that is put to the committee is that we would convene an annual electors meeting on the 12th of February in the Shire Hall, and that is the last day that we can convene the electors meeting. It's also we're a little bit stuck between a rock and a hard place when you consider that the government report that is published around about March time, the expectation that all the auditing processes have to be completed by the 31st, completed by 5th of December, and all the other compliances associated completed by the 31st of December. And the reality is the 12th of February is the last possible date that we can have, and I'm conscious that that is probably within a time where a lot of people are away, but that's the last possible date.
Chair, just a comment on that. I mean, I certainly wouldn't be concerned about that, given our electors meetings are a formality.
Okay.
I don't think so. Does anyone has any questions?
Any questions? Chair, the only question I probably had, not so much about the report, but the steps we're taking with regards to IT risk. We spoke about it last meeting, about access to and so on. The steps being taken.
Through the chair, absolutely. It's probably, as CEO, it's one of the highest priority projects that I have sitting within governance at the moment, and I'm happy to expand on that in another forum, councillor. Both cybersecurity, our ICT infrastructure, and we have done a very short snapshot review of access, and I've engaged Wallace. And in the new year, we will be actually undertaking a significant review of our structure, concurrent to the cybersecurity work that we're doing as well. There's quite a bit of work to be done, and I do look forward to reporting back to the committee on its progress, and I think it's something that should be on the agenda item as we discuss, and certainly will be as we progress through and transition to the Audit Risk and Improvement Committee, in which the regulations have now been passed and come into effect on the 1st of January 2026.
Thank you.
All right, if we have no further questions or comments, we do have a recommendation that with respect to the annual financial report for the financial year 23-24 for Audit and Risk Committee, note the items discussed in the confidential management letter and independent audit report and the administrator's response regarding the joint arrangements, excessive leave balances, IT risk register and lease agreements, and two, that with respect to the annual financial report for the financial year 23-24 for the Audit and Risk Committee, recommend to Council that we accept the annual report, including the annual financial report and the audit report for the 24-25 year, noting that it is unqualified, that we convene the annual electors meeting on the 12th of February 26 in the Shire Hall, commencing at 3 p.m, and we publish the annual report, audit report, notice of meeting, and give public notice to the above effect, pursuant to the Local Government Act 1995, sections 5.29, 5.55, 5.55A, on the Shire's website, official notice boards, and Facebook site. So, is someone happy to move that or have their own? Thank you, Catherine, or Mrs. Negri, and thank you, Mr. Crooks, for seconding it. All those in favour? Thank you, it's unanimous. Item 8, business of an urgent nature.
Thank you, Mr. President. Whilst not necessarily of an urgent nature, I thought it would probably be appropriate to give the committee just a very short update on a webinar that I attended that was hosted by the newly appointed inspector. And just a couple of points as we go into the Christmas break. The local government amendment regulations, including the local government inspector regulations 2026, were passed and came into effect, will come into effect on the 1st of January. And this webinar was for councillors and for administrative staff CNOs to attend and to be informed. All of the new regulations will be on the legislation website and accessible for people to see. But there's a couple of headlines that do come out that involves the committee here. At the last committee meeting, we discussed the transition to ARIC. We are required to transition to the Audit, Risk and Improvement Committee environment, shall we say, by the 30th of June. My suggestion to this committee would be that we could probably start that before. My suggestion would be at the next opportunity that then aligns with the four meetings that's required, or the three meetings, sorry, that's required a year, so that we always have an ARIC meeting in December when we're looking at financials. So potentially we're looking at March for that. Interestingly, on that webinar, it talked about the independent and the deputy, the chair, the independent chair and the independent deputy chair. What was new to us was that the deputy chair, independent, cannot stand in. If we have a chair and a deputy chair around the table, the deputy chair cannot stand in for the chair in their absence. There needs to be a third independent person. So whilst we did challenge this, because it seems, with respect, it does seem a little bit bureaucratic, what's the point of having a deputy in the first place? But it is an individual, independent role in itself. Now, we do not have to do that, and I'm conscious of what was recommended in documentation at the last committee meeting. My recommendation to the committee would be is that we already have individuals identified that are willing to take on and apply for those roles. My suggestion is that we wouldn't have a deputy presiding member around the table, and that individual would attend those meetings as a presiding member in the absence of the formally appointed presiding member. Which means, otherwise, we've got to go out and recruit for a third independent person, which means I also then would have to go back and change the terms of reference and the documentation that were prepared. But I wanted to give the committee an opportunity to maybe just digest that, in also acknowledging that there is significant challenge for a lot of local governments to get one, even two independents. We're not in that situation. But if we stick with the same terms of reference, I will need to go out and try and recruit a third person who would be in the wayside just waiting for the presiding member not to be available, because the deputy would still sit there and still attend but wouldn't be able to preside over the meeting. It sounds strange. That's exactly what it is. So I'm interested in thoughts of the committee.
Sounds like bureaucracy at its best.
It certainly does, Councillor. So my recommendation would be is that the individual that expressed an interest to be deputy would actually fill in if the presiding member wasn't applicable. Interestingly, the State Administrative Tribunal has set the meeting rate at $450. And again, I will make amendment. I think that's really good that SAT is actually setting that. So in our documentation that was approved subsequently by council after recommendation by the last committee meeting, that was identified at $175 respectively. It is a consistent $450 as by SAT, and therefore I'll need to make those changes.
So just to clarify, so you're talking about having a chair, an independent chair, and then just an independent member?
An independent chair, similar to how we have it at SIACA. And then if we know that there is someone in the community that is willing to stand in as acting presiding member, they can't be a deputy. Some larger local governments may wish to have a chair and a deputy chair. I'm not so sure that we need that.
But so if we have a meeting and the chair's there, so is there only one independent person there?
Yes, and that's permissible.
Okay.
That is permissible. It's either one or if we have a deputy, the deputy will always be the deputy and cannot stand in for the presiding member in absence. Yeah. Plenty of questions and plenty of emails were sent by CEOs afterwards who were celebrating the fact that they'd finally found the numbers, but now have to go and potentially do some more work. But we have a choice, I would need to bring that to the next committee meeting and then make another formal recommendation based on the committee's determination. I thought I'd advise you that. As well as that, the compliance audit report that's normally submitted in March, due to the transition from LGIRS to the inspector, the submission of the compliance audit report is not due until the 30th of September. That said, and to allow for the transition, that said, I still intend to undertake the compliance audit report for the last year to be completed by the end of March. And it will just sit there and we won't get any outcomes from that until the end of the year. Happy to take any further questions.
Chair, I did a question, and I'm glad the recommendations are with regards to setting fees of what they are. Given the level of responsibility, whether you be a councillor at the ordinary council meetings or audit committee and so on, was there any discussion about the meeting fees in tiers at all, from say tier one to be tier four, like our bands for our elected members?
Through the chair, that's a good question, and to be honest with you, I've not had time since yesterday afternoon to actually check that, but it is something I do want to look at. Quite rightly, because of the banding that we do have with local governments. My instinct, and I will aim throughout the day to get an answer to you, and I'll communicate that out to the committee, my instinct would say it's probably going to be, I would expect it to be the same, a flat rate. There was no mention of tiers in the conversation. But it also, if there is a lesser amount, there may be a perception that it is maybe devaluing the role that the independent chair has in a smaller local government, which may be perceived as negative. But I will confirm that at the moment it's 450. No mention of a tiered system for regarding those fees.
No, it'd be great to have that discussion.
Absolutely.
Because at different times our audit and risk committee meetings will be fairly short.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, and I'm supposing on top of this, there's travel allowances too. So you've
Correct.
Got people coming in, they can claim travel. But let's say a council of 250,000 people, the audit and risk committee meetings will go for several hours.
Through the chair, I'm conscious of timeframes before the committee meets. I will endeavour tomorrow to get a email out to committee members so that action is undertaken before we break up for the holiday.
So one thing my logical part of my brain is a clarification. So effectively, you're saying there's only going to be one independent member on that committee, but there's no reason we can't have two?
Through the chair, we can have two independent people on the chair, or around the table, the chair and the deputy chair. The only consideration that was brought up was this webinar.
No,
now,
does the other independent person have to be the deputy chair? Do we have to have a deputy chair then?
Yes, if that's the case. It's the independence of the committee is filled by the chair and a deputy chair. And the deputy chair cannot stand in for the chair in his or her absence.
If we only have one independent, then what happens? There's no deputy chair.
No, that's correct. And then all we would do, so the engagement that we've had with the individual that would be the deputy chair, and that was the original conversation, the conversation that I will need to have with that individual will be around, there's no, if the committee recommends the council, there's no requirement to have, it's a choice, a deputy, that person that has put their hand up to what originally be the deputy, will be that person to stand in for the chair in their absence. So we either have one independent person with someone on standby in the room, or we have two in the room and we have someone else, a third person on standby to fill in for the chair. And you are merely reflecting the same challenge that a lot of people were reflecting back at the webinar.
Just makes no sense to me.
I know.
So in the effort to always have an extra independent person, I know this isn't new.
Yeah.
The independent person who comes in has less context when they come in because they're not sitting there through the rest of the time and don't have the history of previous meetings. This is the dumbest thing.
Completely agree.
That's what I'm confused by.
Yeah. I completely agree.
And is this in writing? Because I just find this...
Yeah, and look, the presentation should be sent out, so I'm really happy to to forward. I
believe
would say,
you.
In fact,
I just don't understand their logic because it devalues your use if you're coming into a meeting and you're only reading that and you don't have the context of what's happening.
Especially
you're
coming into
the chair.
I knew this would be an interesting conversation because I think it's going to be an interesting conversation around many... a committee table when having this conversation. It doesn't seem to make sense. Because in any other circumstances, you have a chair and a deputy, and the deputy deputises for the chair. It was a little bit left out of left field.
Yeah, but you're also devaluing the point of the independent person. They don't have the context that they need to do the job properly.
To the chair, I'm more than happy to put an email up to the inspector's office regarding this and actually
on
behalf of the committee.
Because it just doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely. And so I'm more than happy to do that. And I'm quite sure I got two emails from other CEOs who were a little bit bamboozled by that determination. And I will be reflecting back to them the conversations that I've had here with the committee.
And I think we have two independents with some financial acumen and then it's confused by that whole...
I will check, though, whether or not we can... I don't think we're governed by... I think we can bring... I will find out if we can bring another independent person in around the table that doesn't deputise. It's confused the issue when it seemed relatively straightforward. And that's why I think we need to... Mm. That's why I think we need to challenge that. I'm very conscious to be completely factual on what was actually represented in that webinar.
Because this pertains to me, I would be happy to attend as an independent person and step in as the chairperson if necessary, if that is the solution and not...
Yeah.
But I'm just very confused.
I will pose the question that can we have an independent person, not a deputy chair, that actually can stand in? Because
it would be very hard to stand in if you're only standing in for one meeting every 2 years or something.
Could not agree more. But I will take that as an action. I thought the committee might like to hear that nugget of wisdom, and we can go from there.
Just on that point, I'm wondering, as you were talking, CEO, that we, to add it some extra weight, that we involve the zone in this, given the 16 local governments, RT4s, in the same situation, and the CC, Sam McLeod.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I think that's a good suggestion, Councillor. We shall do that. Mm. Easily done.
Thank you very much, Mr. Furr. there's no confidential items. So with that, I'd like to close the meeting at 10:45. Thank you all for your attendance.